My name is Lieutenant Colonel Johnny Paul. I'm a trainee with industry fellow at NCCPA. Today is Monday, the 25th of September, 2017. And I'm interviewing Lieutenant Colonel Promotable Rob Heath, and I'm going to let him tell his story. Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you.
I was wondering if you'd tell us a little bit about the history of you kind of joining the military and what kind of led you up to deciding to become an Army PA.
Okay. I think I originally started when I was in high school as a high school junior and senior. I did an emergency medicine technician, basically like an EMTB course, working with a volunteer ambulance squad near where I lived. And I believe I encountered my first PA, and this was in the 1986-87 range. Interacted with my first PA in an emergency room, bringing patients to a local emergency room and interacting with someone that wasn't a physician provider, that was a PA provider. And I found that to be interesting, and that piqued my interest. I later went from that civilian EMT experience to joining the South Carolina Army National Guard as a 91 Alpha back then, as a combat medic, and really doing that experience, getting into the military side, is where I really started encountering physician assistants back in the late 80s and early 90s as warrant officers. And I later went from from going to college and doing the National Guard to coming on active duty in 1989. And I went as a special operations medic to 1st Ranger Battalion, which is in Hunter Army Airfield in Savannah, Georgia. And during that time frame, really worked for an exceptional Army PA, which was William Bill Donovan, Doc Donovan, who had to me at the time, as a young active duty soldier and a medic in my early 20s and those formative years, having a role model and a mentor, someone that who had grown up as an enlisted medic, enlisted special forces medic, went to one of the early Army PA programs, and who just had that confidence and that willing to mentor junior medics and folks within the organization, and to stress, what we know as combat casualty care and things like that now, and not just to medics and medical personnel, but like to all the Rangers and all the soldiers in the unit. That was, something that was, to look up to want to follow that model. And I look at, Doc Donovan's model of, just out of that, him being that one catalyst role model in the 1st Ranger Battalion, spawned off, I believe when I went to PA school in 1994, I was probably the 8th or 9th medic that had gone to PA school from under his mentorship, and there were more that went behind me. I was not the last one. So that was something that, instilled that desire to further my education, further my professional military career and professional medical career, to go to PA school. So I went to the Army Physician Assistant Program in 1994, graduated in 1996. So the precursor to the current inter-service physician assistance program, the IPAP program. I think most from a PA history perspective, I went to PA school in 1994, and most folks will remember that the physician assistant in the Army transferred from a warrant officer status to a commissioned officer status in 1992. So I went to PA school within a few years of that transition, where you still had like my mentor that I grew up under, who became a CW4 warrant officer before retiring, and then transferring into the Army PA program, where folks like who are now Colonel Gross, folks of that nature, who were captains and newly transitioned warrant officers at that time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So were you the first Army class to be commissioned then?
I was not in the first class to be commissioned. So looking back to my time as a medic in the Ranger Battalion, so one of those other folks in front of me in that pipeline of folks that came under Doc Donovan's mentorship going to PA school, was now retired Army PA, but Greg Broman, who was a sergeant first class, who was the battalion senior medic, my boss in the Ranger Battalion, if you will, the senior enlisted medic in the organization. He went to the PA program and graduated, I guess he graduated in 1992. So where I went just a few classes in after the transition, I went in 1994, when I went and currently in the IPAP program, it's an OCS producing program where folks were the OCS officer candidate school rank during their time in the IPAP program for the enlisted soldiers, and then graduate as a commissioned officer. Greg Broman went to the PA program. Now, well, back up to the warrant officer part. Prior, the PA candidates went to Fort Rucker and went through officer candidate school, the actual OCS course, prior to going to phase one of PA school. And they wore the WAC, the warrant officer candidate rank, while they were in PA school, and then commissioned or promoted over to the warrant officer one rank while they were in phase two. So Greg Broman's class, and so I don't know the class number, but I know he graduated in the 1992 time frame. He was in the transitional class. He went to Fort Rucker to the officer candidate school course, wore one officer the WAC rank while he was in the PA program, and then graduated as a second lieutenant at the end of the course, literally the transition course moving over. So by the time I came in 1994, 2 years into commissioning, started out up front at the OCS, the officer candidate rank, and then graduated as second lieutenants, still in a bachelor degree program. At that time, the Army PA program was through the University of Texas Health Science Center, San Antonio. We graduated as a second lieutenant, and then with due course promotion, I 2 years as a second lieutenant, 2 years as a first lieutenant, 4 years the captain, a little longer timeline than the new folks come out of the IPAP program with the master's degree already, and a little bit accelerated in those timelines.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, you have kind of a similar career path that a lot of Army PAs have, in that you were enlisted and then became an officer. But could you kind of maybe talk a little bit about your combat experience? You were enlisted when you jumped into Panama, and then later on you deployed again as a PA to combat. Could you maybe touch on some of the differences in kind of being a medic on the battlefield versus being a PA on the battlefield?
So, as I mentioned previously, so I was a medic in my first Ranger Battalion. I got there in the summer of 1989. I was a private first class and E3 enlisted medic. By the end of that year, Operation Just Cause, in December of 1989, I participated with the Ranger Battalion and the Ranger Regiment, jumping into making the airborne assault into Panama during Operation Just Cause. And looking back in the late 80s, so 1989, versus, you know, 9/11, 2001, and moving forward in the global war on terrorism, not only from a perspective of being a medic to being a PA, but just the technology of medicine and the technology on the battlefield was significantly different. I jumped into Panama during the airborne assault, with, just a small M5 aid bag full of full of trauma supplies, and under the, the previous, all trauma, two large bore IVs wide open and, stop the bleeding and the things that, during that time frame you were starting to transition, but things like tourniquets, tourniquets are a last resort. If you put a tourniquet on, they're gonna lose that limb. Do a tourniquet as a last resort. We all know now, things are not IVs and wide open, but more Heplox and IV access and tourniquet, then airway breathing circulation and things like that have changed. So when I look, make the leap forward to post 9/11, I deployed as a PA in 2003 to Operation Iraqi Freedom. Also, OIF-1, the very first year of Iraq, deployed with the 173rd Airborne Brigade. I did not make the airborne assault jump with them into Iraq, but joined them 2 months later when the first group of replacements came in or replaced the PA that was there, and then later discovered that we were going to stay for a whole year. So my time there, and then we turned back to Vicenza, Italy, which is where the 173rd Airborne is stationed, Airborne Brigade, and we returned from that year-long deployment in Iraq to learn that we were going to deploy 10 months later for a year in Afghanistan. And when you, back to that, making the leap of technology and things on the battlefield, when I showed up in Iraq as a PA, once again, making that leap from being the individual medic or combat medic on the ground to being the PA responsible for medics on the battlefield, I arrived to a unit that wasn't, necessarily my original unit. They were already deployed, and I showed up with, folks, medics who were well trained by the PA that was there previously, and showed up with, the equipment sets and things that were brought or things that weren't brought. If you think back to the 80s and 90s and pre-9/11, a lot of the combat operations and things that had occurred were much like Panama and Grenada and things of that nature, which were there was a huge assault, things died down, troops were there for a few months, and then you rotated out. And that was in that airborne assault, mindset. That was a little bit of the way the commanders and the units and what they were able to bring with them into Iraq from that airborne unit side was, even when I showed up at the end of May, thinking that we were going to be packing up and going home in say July, and then finding out, staying, for the whole 12-month deployment, did not necessarily have the supplies and things that you may have wished you would have brought if you knew you were coming for a year. So I had the opportunity, I consider myself fortunate, we spent that first year in Iraq, and the Army trying to keep quality people in, and for the medic, for the non-medics and the folks that were there during that time frame, there were a lot of, by being deployed, a lot of the medics could, re-enlist or, re-enlist to stay in the Army, get some bonuses, and some money and some incentive for the hard work that they were doing. And a lot of those came with, you re-enlisted and got the bonuses and the money by signing a contract that kept you in your present duty assignment for another year. So a lot of my medics re-enlisted just before we left Iraq after that first year. And then, as I mentioned, went back to Vicenza and then found out that we were deploying again in 10 months, which means that the majority of my medics that had all of that combat experience were now locked into the unit for the next deployment and couldn't PCS or rotate out and get new folks in. So back to consider myself somewhat fortunate, I got to have a full combat deployment and all that experience for myself as a TA and for my medics, and that list on paper that you had created saying, man, if I had to do this over again, I sure would have brought this medical item or this type of stuff, or I would have packed in this type of fashion. We went back to home station and had 10 months to rearrange, reprep, repack, get different equipment, and then come back with the same people to another combat deployment in Afghanistan, and not just the medics. That was the unit as a whole, the infantry personnel, the combat arms personnel. A lot of people had, you know, were either did not rotate out because their three years were in Italy hadn't ended, or they re-enlisted and they were there, which really allowed our unit to go back almost like a do-over, go back and to another combat deployment with a lot more knowledge and from a medical standpoint, packed and, you know, missioned sets equipment. Things were loaded differently and configured differently and kind of gave us the ability to go back and kind of operate at a whole next level in that next deployment, if that makes sense. One thing about, you ask about deploying to a combat environment as a medic and then deploying to a combat environment as a PA, that second deployment to Afghanistan really, to me, highlights that because of the eastern Afghanistan, the terrain, the mountains. You can't necessarily, we couldn't take, you know, things you would take for granted in Iraq, taking the field ambulance, the Humvee ambulances out on a patrol or out on a mission or transporting a patient from, you know, point A to point B. You really could not do that in Afghanistan. The ambulances that we brought from home station are the one, you know, the like the 4-liter ambulances, the kind you would normally see, you know, on a military base or in a military formation. Those never left the forward operating base. We use those to transport people from the aid station to the helicopters and back. They didn't have armor on them. They couldn't go out in the rough terrain. When you look at an airborne infantry battalion like what I was in that would normally be, you know, in close proximity, my infantry battalion was split across Paktika province, which is in the eastern part of Afghanistan, the size of several small states within the United States, so which put me geographically separated from my medics, right? So as a PA, you prep for deployment, you prep and train your medics in not just combat casualty care, but, you know, disease, non-battle injury, normal medical type skills. And then you take those medics and you place them hours apart from each other, and hours apart from the PA on their own, out there in those small towns and on those small operating bases. And then as a PA kind of more located with the larger main headquarters of the unit, when smaller units and organizations became engaged with the enemy or had an IED or an explosive device on a convoy, you're back there in that higher headquarters and really you're listening to the radio, you're looking to, you know, technology on the battlefield, you're looking at the computer screens, and you are listening and watching the people that you have trained that are out there delivering care on a battle space, listening to their voices on the radio, listening to them call back and ask questions, and then, you know, you're the one making those decisions, you know, what kind of support they need or down that road. So that's really one of the things that has struck me from that medic perspective to that PA perspective. And then, you know, also the medics that were physically with me in an aid station, and we were fortunate, you know, halfway through that Afghanistan deployment, we acquired a forward surgical team. So the Army looked at Afghanistan and the geographical differences, and someone like me as a PA who had trauma patients come in, but because of the weather, the snow, the mountain passes, the inability to fly helicopters to certain areas, you know, had to do prolonged or extended trauma care on patients. They decided to work a new concept, which was splitting forward surgical teams in half and pairing them with infantry battalion aid stations. And I was fortunate the very first one that came into Afghanistan came to my brigade, and I received one of those halves. So I guess that would be that next level is the medics that were physically with me, and we were co-located with that half of a forward surgical team where, you know, my medics provided and myself provided that that emergency first resuscitative ER type care, and then patients going into the operating room with the Ford surgical team, and then the ability for, it was only half of the Ford surgical team, so for my medics to go in and for me to go in and scrub in and do true trauma surgery with great trauma surgeons, orthopedic surgeons, was, you know, those skills and things that acquired that I thought were great for me developing as a PA, but also for my medics. And then looking at, you know, I mentioned, you know, Doc Donovan being my model or my mentor when I was a medic, and someone that who I've tried to emulate as a PA. You know, I've also had the ability now as I've transitioned to higher and different positions, the senior physician assistant for the 82nd Airborne Division, being a core PA with 18th Airborne Corps, and being on at the office of the Army Surgeon General. Now I have several of my medics that are now PAs that have followed in those footsteps and down those roads. So when, you know, I'm the senior PA for the 82nd Airborne Division or 18th Airborne Corps, and I have my former medics who are now PAs that are in that same organization. You know, that's great to see that transformation and to see folks who have followed that path and wanted to go down the same road. And as we're sitting here today doing the interview, I have several former medics of mine who are now PAs who are currently deployed overseas, you know, as we speak right now. So that's, you know, something, training and mentoring their own medics and, you know, handing down, you know, what's always been that Army PA, and I would say even civilian PA, every PA I've met, whether they're an Army PA or a civilian PA that's never served in the military, they all seem to have that same desire and willingness and wanting to mentor and train other PAs and other medical personnel.
As the senior PA for the 18th Airborne Corps, how did your focus change from more of a tactical to an operational or strategic PA?
So that's a very good question. And so what I found, and you know, most people find as they, even I spoke to a civilian PA, not military affiliated, just this past weekend, and someone who's the chair of a physician assistant program, a school, college program, who finds themselves in this somewhat of that same predicament. The longer you're in, and if you decide to, you want to move up to supervisory or higher level or management or other positions, military or civilian, you tend to take more steps away from physically delivering primary care or touching patients on a regular basis. So that's one of those things that changed for me as an Army PA, going from being a PA in the units with that direct contact to becoming, say, the 18th Airborne Corps PA, which definitely transitioned from an Army standpoint more into that field grade senior officer role, but also into getting more policy management oversight. So for folks who may be reading, listening, so for, you know, 18th Airborne Corps for the Army, 18th Airborne Corps is the Army units aligned on the eastern coast of the United States. So units, medics, PAs, folks that are out there going from Florida through all the military bases, you know, Fort Stewart in Georgia, Fort Benning, Fort Campbell, Kentucky, Fort Drum, New York, you know, all of those combat units aligned in there. So, you know, now you are looking more, trying not to look down and in as in a tactical, close, what's affecting me on the ground right now and what am I doing to, you know, having to pick your head up and look up and out, more a strategic vision, how you can affect decisions and policies and things that are going to affect large groups of people and, you know, how health care or combat casualty care, or how training is done for those PAs or 68 Whiskeys or infantrymen or soldiers in general, you know, how that medical training is programmed and delivered and a resource. You know, so you're going more into that strategic looking at manning, equipping, and training the force versus being that frontline deliverer of primary health care or emergency medicine on the battlefield and things like that.
Okay, well, final question. Do you have any advice for any future Army PAs, maybe medics, or even PA students that are in the program right now?
So the main thing I could say for people who think they have an interest in becoming an Army PA, is seek out a mentor, seek out mentorship. I know, you know, formally, if you're looking at a civilian PA program or the inter-physician assistant program, inter-service physician assistant program, when you're looking at those programs, a lot of those programs now require, you know, a certain number of shadowing hours or some clinical hours or time, you know, which kind of helps you get a feel for the profession you want to enter and make sure that is there for you. What I would say was, you know, definitely look kind of above and beyond that. Look for mentors. Don't look just to check your hours on the box, but to find someone who wants to mentor you, who wants to help bring you along, and go down that route. The same for students or candidates that are currently in the inner service physician student program. You know, that is, as you make that transition, I mean, you are going to, when you're in the PA school pipeline, you know, you're in the didactic portion or you're in the portion where you're doing your clinical rotations. I mean, you are medically probably some of the smarter, more well-educated PAs in the force, because you're drinking from the fountain, you're drinking from the knowledge, you're right there in that academic environment. When you leave that training environment, whether you grew up as a medic in the Army, and with the IPAP program, if you grew up as a chemical officer or a helicopter pilot or whatever background, you know, officer or warrant officer enlisted that you're coming from, you know, bring that knowledge and your discipline and skill set with you, but keep an open mind. Remember, when you transition and go to that first unit as a PA, you've got all the medical knowledge and training in your head, and you know the answers, but what you need to be open to learning and paying attention and learning from your medics and those who are working for you is learning how to be a PA in those units. You have to be willing to take a step back and make sure that you are learning not just the answers and what the healthcare is, but learning how to translate and deliver your healthcare in that new environment where you're at, whether it's an aid station or a clinic, or it's in the field, or it's deployed in a combat setting. You need to definitely learn and round your trade. For students currently in the IPAP program, one thing that I would say, and in particular for those who did grow up similar to myself and others who came from that enlisted medic background to the PA program, and if you follow that route, chances are you have been a staff sergeant or a sergeant first class. I just met a sergeant first class 68 Whiskey combat medic who is a new phase 2 student at the Belvoir Community Hospital program here in the National Capital Region. One of the things that, from my own experience and then seeing other PAs come into units around me, are those people who, particularly if they were medics in the past before becoming a PA, or on the special operations side, they were a special operations ranger medic or special forces medic, and now they're coming into those organizations as a PA. There is that tendency to, you've been in those units before, you were one of the senior enlisted medical personnel in those units. There is sometimes a tendency not to want to let go of your former role. So back to, we were talking about supervising medics and things earlier. One of the things that I've seen a lot of IPAs have trouble and struggle with, and some to the point that it hurts or hinders or can cut short their military career, is when you come into your new unit as the PA, and I'll use an infantry or a combat arms type unit as an example, you come in as the PA, and in that organization, you have a sergeant first class, you have a platoon sergeant medic, you have a medical service corps lieutenant helping run administration for that medical platoon, and you have a platoon of 30 or so medics in most instances. What you can't do is come in and still live in your previous role and try to be the platoon sergeant or try to be the platoon leader if you did those things in the past. You cannot micromanage your personnel and learn your craft as a PA and be effective. What you need to do, the same as you're going to train them those combat casualty care skills, you used to be the platoon sergeant, or if you were an officer, you used to be a platoon leader. You know what their job is. You know what they're supposed to be doing. Don't micromanage them into doing it, because then you're not going to be able to do your own job. You need to step back, empower them, let them do their job, and then coach, teach, mentor them in that fashion, the same as you would on their medical skills, overall, leading to a more cohesive, well-rounded unit that will be much more effective and much more contributing to the lethality and the mission of readiness for the Army.
We've been talking to Lieutenant Colonel Rob Heath. He just was selected to be promoted to Colonel. Been talking to him for the Physician Assistant History Society, honoring our history and ensuring our future. Thank you so much for talking with us, sir.
Thank you.